Welcome to the CRE Exchange podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in this space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a leading provider of CRE intelligence. We connect data, analytics, applications, and expertise to power CRE performance.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and Associate Director of Research at Altus Group. I'm joined by Omar El-Tarai, our U.S. Director of Research. Together, we'll share the latest news and trends in the U.S. commercial real estate market. Omar, it's great to be with you. What are we going to talk about today?
As we're recording, we're still in the midst of earnings releases for Q2 2025. And while last week we gave you some coverage of specific REITs from across the traditional property sectors, this week we're going to continue that coverage and recap, but we'll do something a little bit different with many more calls in the rear window. We're going to fill you in on some of the general themes from across these calls and also touch on the themes that are from non-REIT companies, but are still relevant to CRE, such as capital allocators, brokerages, and construction and development firms.
Excellent one. How about you start with those capital allocators?
Certainly. So the way I broke these down is really into two groups. You got the banks, and then you have the non-banks. First, coming out from the bank calls, I would say one of the main themes is that the bank lenders are cautious, but they do see stabilizing CRE exposure. West Bank Corp noted that they're growing their CRE loan book by less than 2% year on year and are focusing on kind of a balanced approach to their loan portfolio allocation across single family, C&I, and CRE. So about a third. Pinnacle said that they're restarting their CRE lending after 3 to 4 months of caution. Valley National also expects their CRE loan balances to really stabilize through the end of 2025 and are anticipating low single-digit growth. Another key theme coming out of those calls is that the office sector is still seeing some ongoing challenges, but again, has that stabilization flavor. Wells Fargo expects office fundamentals to take some more time to recover, but ultimately that valuations for office appear to be stabilizing. You saw this come through in the M&T as their call as well, as their criticized loan levels declined by about $1 billion for their CRE criticized balances. And then the banks were also noting that they're seeing more competition in the lending space. So again, Wells Fargo noted that they're seeing what they described as very competitive spreads. And the primary competition that banks were noting is not just from other banks, but is also coming in from non-banks as well. This competition seems to be intensifying, and that's limiting some of the spread or the potential for spread widening that one might expect with any sort of market volatility or economic uncertainty. One other thing to note on the bank side is that after Pinnacle Financial and Synovus reported their second quarter earnings, they announced a merger. I thought that this was quite notable because these banks together have about 30% of their loan book in commercial real estate. So it's a higher than normal allocation. And the combined entity would have approximately $116 billion in total assets, of which about $81 billion in across their combined loan books. And so 30% of that is in CRE. So a much larger regional bank. Looking to the non-bank side, so this is pretty much everything from asset managers to investment managers and usually the owners of real estate. I would say that the tone was certainly much more optimistic. A common theme coming from across these calls was that commercial real estate has definitely reached a bottom. You have Conan Steers saying that commercial real estate prices have generally bottomed and noted that after 7 consecutive quarters of negative returns, we've seen 4 consecutive positive quarters of returns. Blackstone noted that the building blocks for a CRE recovery are clearly coming into place and noted that it's a question of when, not if. Ares also noted that they continue to see improvements in the fundamentals, noting rent growth and property values were turning positive. And there's been a kind of overall sentiment has improved on the non-bank side. A few of the calls did note that we're seeing a shift from focus on multifamily and industrial, which were categorized as the winners of the last cycle, to more necessity-driven retail and data centers being the new areas of focus for this new cycle. These non-banks did note that that kind of strong performance in these winning sectors were really driven by data centers. And this came out very clearly in the Blackstone and Blue Owl calls. In these winning sectors, Blackstone and Blue Owl noted some significant improvement and positive momentum being built in the data center space, while Cohen & Steers noted that the open-air shopping centers and necessity retail is performing quite well. Another key theme from the non-bank calls is that credit is also gaining a lot of traction. Private credit continues to significantly outpace in terms of real estate fundraising. Apollo noted this on their call, and credit quality amongst the non-bank loan book is quite exceptional, with really minimal defaults being noted across all the platforms. The non-banks have also highlighted some very strong tailwinds in terms of the fundamentals for commercial real estate, and this is really helping to build the real estate thesis. Blackstone called out that the construction pipelines are significantly smaller than their peak levels hit only a couple of years ago. New supply is coming down dramatically, which is really creating this favorable dynamic for this back half of 25 and 26 and beyond, as well as the cost of capital is improving as spreads are really returning to that pre-crisis level. On this kind of positive environment and strong tailwinds, Hamilton Lane and others in their call noted that they're seeing increased institutional interest in the broad category of real assets. A final kind of call out is that as institutions are moving into this space in a more meaningful way, a number of these investment managers and asset managers also called out the private wealth channel, really showing renewed interest in real estate strategies. I think we've touched on prior calls, but the expected proposal for the inclusion of private market assets into 401ks and policy change that would allow that is something that's getting a lot of these non-bank capital allocators quite excited. And so that's a lot of calls, went through a lot of the transcripts. And I would say overall, the financing environment, whether you're looking at banks or non-banks, is turning much more positive. And Cole, I know that you were also tuning in to, I would say, the traditional REIT sectors. What were you seeing there?
Yeah, you're probably going to hear me harken back to some of the stuff we talked about last week or on the last podcast, but effectively have added a lot more, gone through a lot more transcripts here. So you're going to hear some high-level takeaways from each of the main sectors. And I'm excited to hear the niche sectors, which I know you went through, but we'll kick it off here with retail. So very high level, brick and mortar is definitely outperforming expectations. A lot of retailers are opening new locations. The centers that are anchored by grocery and necessity-based retail, like you just mentioned, are performing quite well. Leasing momentum is strong. On Regency and Kimco's calls, leasing spreads were very high. Tenant retention is pretty robust. And a couple of the REITs are actually going to have some development. And so Regency and Agree are increasing their development activity. I think they have some pretty strong confidence in long-term tenant demand for these centers. As far as earnings are concerned, most of the retail REITs beat and raised guidance. Regency raised their same property NOI guidance 4.5 to 5%. They lifted their full year FFO estimates. Agree did the same. General outlook is that retail REITs are bullish on supply demand fundamentals, even though some are developing. There's very limited new supply. I think the build versus buy debate is something that you're going to touch on in a little bit, but there's been very little new supply of retail. So these REITs are really, they've got strong balance sheets and they are expecting to see growth in the latter half of 25 and into 2026. Office sector, a little bit of a different story. Very high level. The kind of bifurcation is still deepening. Your trophy assets and your top submarkets here in New York and in Boston CBD, they're all performing pretty well, but commodity office is really struggling. One thing that was kind of a consistent theme was there's a lot of capital recycling going on. So those REITs that do own commodity office are selling those off. BXP and Vornado were two that are getting rid of some non-core assets and effectively recycling them by buying some assets in these key submarkets. Another theme, return to office. BXP and a couple others actually cited some studies about in-office attendance. There was a JLL study called out that said that in just 2 years, Fortune 100 companies, 5% of them 2 years ago said that they had an RTO policy, and now it's over 50%. So massive change in just a little over 24 months. Earnings, though, mixed but improving. BXP beat expectations, did as well, but they talked mostly about improved liquidity, though they did not raise their outlook. So I'd categorize the office REITs as having selective optimism. They are very confident in some of these premier submarkets. One market that's really come back and was mentioned a few times by the REITs that own there is San Francisco. A lot of demand from AI tenants. New York is seeing some stabilization, very limited construction starts. And so I think that's one of the things that's propping some of these up. And they're bullish on rent growth for some of these high quality assets. Industrial, a little bit of a different story as well. Leasing demand is stabilizing, but it is solid. After kind of the tariff turmoil beginning on April 2nd, you heard us on the last episode talk about Prologis. They have a really large leasing pipeline. A lot of this interest is from 3PLs and larger users, which had held off in the wake of April 2nd. But development is gaining or is accelerating again. So several REITs, Rexford, Prologis, they're really ramping up build-to-suit projects and spec projects. You heard across a couple of calls the cap rate spreads are normalizing. Market rent growth is moderating, but you're still seeing some tenants renew and expand. As far as earnings are concerned, most of them beat and lifted their guidance. Prologis did raise their FFO guidance for the full year, which we did dig into on the last podcast. More broadly, though, I'd say the outlook is cautiously confident. Supply chains are being re-optimized in the wake of the tariffs finally coming online, some on August 1st. But the fundamentals are really there. A lot of the calls that I covered or the transcripts I looked at, these are companies that focus on infill in some of the markets that are really strapped for new supply, Southern California being one. They're still pretty optimistic, even though there's been a drop in imports. Looking at multifamily, demand is really healthy, but rent growth is very muted. The Sunbelt markets are absorbing a lot of record supply, but still modest increases in rent. One call that I don't think we've covered before was Camden. They reported one of the best demand environments that they've seen in their existence, but rent growth was under 1%. Housing affordability is a big tailwind for the multifamily REITs. High home ownership costs are definitely supporting renter retention. I thought this was really interesting. For those REITs that do track move-outs, or the reason for move-outs, rather, to buy homes, that figure was at a record low. So they're seeing a lot of folks stick around longer than they would expect to in kind of your homeowner demographic or your future homeowner demographic. They all generally believe that the supply inflection point is either here or is nearing. Multiple REITs expect 2026 to mark the return of stronger rent growth. You heard figures anywhere from 4 to 5% in 2026. As far as earnings are concerned, most beat expectations, but modestly. Camden, Essex, Avalon Bay all recorded slight beats on core FFO. And the primary driver here was actually lower expenses and very stable occupancy. Now, outlook for them, 2025 being steady, but 2026 being stronger. Like I mentioned, a couple of the REITs mentioned that they expect 2026 rent growth to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 4-5%, but is going to remain subdued throughout the rest of 2025 as that supply continues to come online. Taking those four, overall takeaway, I'd say retail is firing on all cylinders. Grocers, discounters are totally leading the way. Industrial, while there was some questions surrounding kind of tariff turmoil, demand fundamentals are there. You're seeing some demand shift back to larger footprint facilities that I think had held off a little bit toward the beginning of the year. Now, multifamily is weathering that peak supply. Again, expects a rebound by 2026 as far as rent's concerned. In office, trophy stories continuing to be strong, and you're seeing capital kind of move out of commodity office and into those. So despite a lot of the macro uncertainty, I think these REIT management teams, at least in the traditional sectors, are feeling pretty confident. A lot of them guided higher for the rest of the year. And I really think that's saying something considering what we were hearing just 3 months ago. So a lot of interesting nuggets in those calls. Hopefully I didn't regurgitate too much that we discussed last week, but with a lot of additional calls under our belt now, I think got a pretty wide view of what's going on. But a lot of the REIT world is not just those four sectors. I think you've heard anywhere from maybe it's 19 or 20 different sectors. So Omar, tell us about the niche REITs.
Yeah, so the specialty REITs are the REITs that cover property sectors that are not in that kind of four main food group. There are quite a few more, as you noted, but continuing with some of the confidence and I would say the positivity. One of the sectors is data centers. Really, it's only two REITs, Digital Realty Trust and Equinix. But overall, they reported exceptional demand, really being driven by AI adoption and the broader digital transformation that's underway and across pretty much every aspect of the economy. They also noted that there's another major kind of tailwind is just continued government support for domestic data center development. So not only do you have the demand, but then you also have the financing availability there. Rather robust customer pipelines were reported across both, as well as record bookings, and just overall strong pricing power and margin expansion at these two specialty REITs. I'll bring up data centers a few more times, but those were the high level themes within that specialty group. A bit more diverse specialty group or sector is healthcare, and I would characterize it as really being a bit more bifurcated. Listen to and read the transcripts for Welltower, Omega Health, Alexandria, and HealthPeak. It's tricky because they cover rather different healthcare property types and segments, so they're ultimately exposed to different operating conditions, occupiers, and just business metrics. But if I had to bucket in terms of tailwinds, there is a real kind of demographic tailwind, which is benefiting some of these. And that's being driven predominantly by the aging American population. Welltower, which focuses on senior housing, is a clear beneficiary of that or is riding on that tailwind. And they noted a much stronger kind of occupancy growth, 400 basis points of improvement, as well as their supply constraints, which I think we're hearing across pretty much all the sectors, and that's benefiting the fundamentals of the properties. One area that's benefiting from this is skilled nursing, which Omega Healthcare has a significant portion of their portfolio allocated there. And they also noted that the outpatient medical properties are performing quite strongly. They've seen a 6% re-leasing spread over the second quarter. But it's not all good across all the different healthcare property types. A theme that kind of emerged was that there are funding challenges that are ultimately impacting the occupier demand. This is very notable in funding challenges that are facing biotech tenants, which ultimately reduces the demand for lab space. This is something that HealthPeak noted. And they said that the lab segment is facing headwinds from essentially just the inability for their occupiers to either get new funding or to essentially maintain their space, as well as Alexandria, who had noted that they saw around 768,000 square feet of move-outs at the end of 2024. 4. They're still working through that, trying to get that space leased up. They did give a little bit of an update and noted that some AI and tech companies in certain markets are actually turning attention to that lab space. They, on their call, they highlighted Bay Area and I used the term that these AI companies are gobbling up space. And then on the same theme of funding challenges, Omega ultimately noted that the recent bankruptcy of Genesis Healthcare, which leased or owned around 340 SNFs or skilled nursing facilities and senior living facilities across the U.S., the fact that they're in bankruptcy is creating certain opportunities for acquisition or just market expansion via Section 363 process, which quick side note, or I had to look this one up, but the Section 363 process is part of a bankruptcy, is part of bankruptcy law that lets companies that are in bankruptcy sell their assets, whether that's buildings, equipments, or their entire business division, quickly to ultimately skip waiting for the whole bankruptcy case to finish. So ultimately, Omega was calling that out as this is potentially creating an opportunity for them. If I had to summarize healthcare, it really is that kind of bifurcated. You're seeing a variety of conditions play out across the various property types and business models that are within that broader category of healthcare. So if we looked at arguably one of the more like specialty or close to traditional hospitality and hotel sector, I think that hospitality is also kind of a mixed bag. From the calls of Host, Park, and Ryman, you're seeing a mixed picture based on what each of these properties is exposed to, in whether that's where it's located or its main demand segment. But in terms of common themes, urban markets are continuing to outperform and are still showing signs of strong recovery or continued momentum or continued strength. Business travel was noted as really gradually returning to normal levels, though it's still quite slow. And group bookings and group travel, there's been concern that there's increasing kind of cancellations. However, it was noted that it's more of a modification as opposed to cancellation. So again, I would say kind of a mixed bag for hospitality. And then the final kind of specialty sector that I tuned into was self-storage. Self-storage has had a bit of a rough past 2 to 4 quarters. And I would say that in the second quarter, based on the results from Extra Space, National Storage Affiliates, and CubeSmart, I really think that self-storage seems to be nearing an inflection point. And the reason I would say that is that you're starting to see positive pricing. This is really emerging after a rather difficult period with improved rent spreads being reported by multiple companies, as well as some of the supply pressures that have introduced some real fundamental challenges within certain markets across the self-storage landscape are starting to ease. Markets that were called out as really kind of showing some early signs of those supply pressures easing include Portland, Seattle, and Chicago, as well as Extra Space reported for the first time since March 2022 that they've seen positive move-in rates. So I thought that was notable. They did note that the Sunbelt markets are still facing quite a bit of headwinds, but ultimately are expected to recover. But overall, if we take a step back and look at all the specialties and work to really kind of summarize what the major themes coming out of all of them were, I'd say that the market is really, you're hearing this positivity kind of theme come out in these calls, despite kind of sector specific divergence. Tech infrastructure and data centers, I would say, is really leading the growth and the optimism. Healthcare is showing resilience with pockets of exceptional performance, especially if you look at that kind of the demographic tailwind-backed portfolios and property types. Self-storage seems to be turning a corner. And then hospitality, I would characterize as maintaining but choppy. And then the overall environment really suggests that conditions for commercial real estate are improving, albeit sector selection and market selection are more important than ever. So I know that was a cornucopia of calls and sectors, but Cole, you turned into the brokerages, and I think the brokerages have some of the most holistic views. So hopefully we didn't lose any listeners on that last niche segment, but what were you hearing with the brokerages?
You know, just like you said, the reason to tune into these is because these folks are at the center of transactions, whether that's leases or sales or other capital markets activity. Like, really important to tune into these. Got just a short bit to share. Covered CBRE, JLL, Newmark, some of the large brokerages, in addition to some residential ones. And I think you're going to notice some parallels when I get to the takeaways here. But both CBRE and JLL beat expectations. They had big gains in leasing, particularly in office and industrial. CBRE said their office leasing was up 15%, U.S. sales up 25%. Cushman & Wakefield met expectations. They had some steady leasing demand, and they are focused now on cost control. Newmark was a bit of an outlier in this category. They missed estimates. Their kind of capital markets rebound has been a little bit slower. They said leasing was up and sale deal pipelines are rebuilding. But I would say that there was a shared theme. Capital markets are slowly thawing. A lot of these firms and are saying their clients are getting off the sidelines even without the Fed cutting just yet. And so the tone was much more constructive or positive than last quarter. You saw some similar stuff on the residential front. So I looked at Compass and Zillow. Compass beat expectations. They said this was on higher agent productivity and seasonally stronger demand in the second quarter. They raised their full year guidance and framed the quarter as a turning point for the residential market. Zillow also posted a beat. Revenue was up 15%. But interestingly, the strength there came from rentals and mortgages. So even though you think of Zillow's kind of core business as single family homes, that wasn't exactly where they found their strength in the second quarter. So their multifamily business up 36%, mortgages 41% on the year. Now, overall, I'd say both commercial and residential, the brokerages are definitely adjusting to the higher for longer rate environment. They are starting to grow again. Most of them reaffirmed guidance or raised it. Capital markets are definitely recovering from a low base, and leasing momentum is building when you look at the commercial brokerages. The residential platforms are benefiting from a modest rebound in buyer activity. We've talked about this before, but there's only so long you can hold off on kind of life decisions when housing is concerned. And so I think while things were really frozen from 2021 on, and then especially while the for sale market was freezing after rates shot up, things are really starting to thaw. So they're seeing a modest rebound in buyer activity. But definitely some interesting stuff there with the brokerages. Of course, important to get their holistic view on the market. But broadly, I think more optimistic than we've seen them in quite some time. So definitely an interesting set of calls. With the next kind of portion of the episode here, I think we wanted to take a look at all of the calls that we had have just run through, but look at them from the opposite side or across sections as far as issues go. And one of the things, and I'm happy to jump right into this, I know you looked at a couple too, was tariffs. This did come up on a bunch of calls, and I'll run through a few things that I noted from at least the traditional property sectors. But on industrial, this is where this showed up the most. Tariffs are just cited as creating a lot of uncertainty. They have slowed large leasing decisions. They prompted a couple of REITs to delay development starts. One in particular was East Group. But the industrial REITs remain pretty optimistic that tightening supply is going to support support rental rate growth once the environment stabilizes. Retail direct mentions to tariffs were minimal, but there were a couple of times it did pop up in that sector or noting pressure on select tenant categories, particularly as input costs are concerned. But still pretty strong. Leasing spreads are large. The consumer continues to be resilient, which I'll talk about in a little bit, but sentiment was pretty positive here. Again, multifamily, not a major theme. Tariffs were not a major theme. I think those operators are more focused on interest rates, new supply, rental affordability, housing issues. So there were some mentions to tariffs, but they were more or less indirect, folded into broader macro concerns. And same thing was really the case for Office. I think one thing I noted from BXP's call, now maybe they want to take this back, but tariff resolution being a part of a broader rebound in corporate confidence, supporting some leasing activity. So not a primary driver there, but tariffs relief did contribute to some positive signs there. But I want to get to one thing you were looking at, and that was build versus buy.
Yeah, so I think this was a theme that we started hearing on prior calls or with individual companies pointing out that despite there being cost pressures on the development side, if they could build the right asset, it was more attractive to build a new office and build Class A office than it was to buy any Class B or really buy any other asset available. And so this is a topic that we wanted to dive into a bit more to expand this. I ended up looking at a number of the construction and development companies to hear what they were saying in terms of their activity. You're seeing kind of the same themes flow through, right? So in terms of like positive drivers across the construction activity, AI was again a kind of a main theme and demand theme. The infrastructure boom that is underway is really leading to data center explosion and adjacent development work that would be supportive of that. Caterpillar noted that power generation grew by 19%, and that's primarily due to demand for reciprocating engines for data center applications, as well as they still have this kind of long tailwind, which is the IIJA, or the Infrastructure and Investment and Jobs Act, which only 36% of that has been deployed, which that means that we still have a ways to go in terms of there's ample funding and kind of federal incentives there for more infrastructure growth. A number of the construction and development companies also noted increasing kind of political or policy support really coming through. So whether that's new federal legislation, which is providing tax incentives for domestic manufacturing and infrastructure development, AECOM noted that the Big Beautiful Bill includes tax incentives such as bonus depreciation that really is attractive to bring and build out onshore manufacturing. Also, the recent Supreme Court ruling and executive orders that are targeted at streamlining NEPA, or the National Environmental Policy Act, is expected really to speed up the permitting process. There are a number of, I would say, headwinds that were noted and cost pressures, right? Whether that's material cost escalation and just kind of interest rate impacts affecting project costs, that's not a new topic, but that popped up. Trade policy uncertainty, again, this is touching on kind of something that you were noting, but this really came through in these development companies. One I would call out is Fluor Corporation. They noted that clients are taking a wait-and-see approach due to ongoing trade policy discussions, cost escalation, and interest rates. And they've seen some project cancellations and others just being extended and deferrals taking place. That is something we've heard a lot from, like, the industrial earnings calls in this quarter as well as in prior quarters. But overall, I would say that the development and construction companies are showing like strong medium-term growth. They echoed a lot of the kind of same infrastructure data focus, as well as like the similar headwinds around trade policy and interest rate and cost pressures. Another big topic and kind of cross-sectional theme is consumer health. What are you hearing there?
Yeah, a couple of things, and we'll start with industrial. I think consumer health was discussed on those calls, mainly in the context of retail supply chains, e-commerce. Demand has been extremely strong for e-commerce, but now it's showing some signs of normalization. I think a lot of the REITs noted that resilient consumer spending is continuing to support warehouse leasing in a few key areas: food, discount, general merchandise. Multifamily consumer health cited on these calls, they cited the consumer health is pretty strong, very low rent to income ratios and high household incomes among new renters, particularly in urban markets. However, There are some affordability barriers. These are wealthy households, but they are not entering the for sale market. And they're actually, this is translating into limited move outs, like we mentioned before. So definitely some signs there, strong consumer health. Retail is where you'll probably see this reflected most on these calls. It's been high foot traffic, resilient spending across all types of centers, including those serving low income shoppers. And while a few REITs were flagging caution among kind of select groups of tenants, overall tone pretty confident about the consumer, strong leasing spreads, minimal rent delinquencies for a lot of different types of retail tenants. Now, on office calls, consumer health, not a super central theme, but something I did want to mention that I feel is related was that they did cite really strong corporate earnings strength, which I think is seen as supportive of demand in some of these gateway markets. But more or less, generally, anytime consumer health or the macro backdrop was mentioned, this is a little bit indirect, but definitely positive about kind of macroeconomic stability in the short term here. But very loose discussion of consumer health on some of these calls, but I do think it's important to call out since consumer spending is the engine of the U.S. economy and real estate is the conduit through which the economy operates. So it's definitely something to keep an eye out on. Now, Omar, I'm going to give it back to you to cap us off with kind of overall sentiment and outlook across the calls that you covered.
Yeah, so I think we've hit a rather notable change since the start of the year, where it seems like the consensus view is one that is increasingly more positive for commercial real estate. Now, I know we've touched on a lot of sectors, a lot of different areas of focus amongst these companies that can absolutely deviate a bit from that midpoint. But overall, I think the number of companies that were reporting either improved or continued positive traction within their businesses, as well as improved outlooks, it was pretty clear, or it, at least kind of taking the high level view, there was a lot more positivity than there was same time last year, or even just a quarter ago. Whether that is coming from the capital side of an improving situation amongst banks and your traditional lenders, clear positive and like strong optimism amongst the non-banks and allocators or other capital providers, as well as you heard this kind of really flow through the REITs and the various sectors that are touching on the operating performance across the actual real estate portfolio. And taking it all together, I would say that we seem to be moving towards a increasingly positive back half of the year. Now, all the calls did note certain risks, right? There was no management team was Pollyannish or overly optimistic. But that being said, I would characterize the Q2 results as sign of a lot of positivity for commercial real estate.
Excellent. We've covered a lot today as far as some of these calls are concerned, but I would agree with you. It sounds like we've really reached a turning point as far as the CRE is concerned. And to me, I'm always, maybe I'm not surprised, but it seems like everything comes back to supply and demand fundamentals with these industries. So I think the outlook has really changed in the last quarter. Now, we've got a couple of things coming up, but I did want to mention at the end of the call here, in a few episodes, we'll be covering the second quarter 2025 investments and transactions quarterly report, which should be released toward the end of August. So excited to share that with you guys. As a reminder, it's kind of a national overview of commercial real estate sale and transaction activity across markets. We cover volume and pricing and different sector level statistics. So be on the lookout for that. I'm sure we'll share that on a future episode as well. But Omar, I think that is all the time we've got today. So before we sign off, I do want to remind our listeners, if you like the show, we would love it if you could rate it. Please give us 5 stars on Apple or Spotify. Leave us comments there as well. We would love to read them. Or feel free to just send us an email, altusresearch@altusgroup.com. We'd love to know what topics you'd like covered on the program. But in the meantime, Omar, been a pleasure. Thanks for all your research on some of these calls, and look forward to speaking with you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a leading provider of CRE intelligence. We connect data, analytics, applications, and expertise to power CRE performance. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity. partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.